Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast that exists solely to remind you that this world is a good place. I source intrepid guests with incredible stories of magic, miracle, and mystery. And this week's guest is no exception. Coach Willie Blake reminds us, with both of his stories, that synchronicity abound, and also that sometimes when things that we classify as negative occur, maybe they're just leading us to exactly where we need to be. Coach Willie shares two stories this week, and I gotta tell you, he's incredibly funny, incredibly open, and is an impeccable storyteller. Now, Coach Willie grew up with dyslexia, which was diagnosed in first grade, and for years believed he was broken. As he says, he spent most of his life trying to catch up, trying to hide, and trying to be someone he wasn't. Well, his story is pretty profound, and just the fact that he was able to rise above his circumstance and then bring blessings to others is also part of the miracle this week. So now, without further ado, here's my conversation with Coach Willie Blake.
Literally the first day that we were there, the house that we were going to stay at flooded. Like the basement where they had like the guest room and stuff, a piped burst, it flooded down and it flooded their basement. And they're like, hey, we can't have you in. Like, we can't have you here. We can't guest you.
So my first question for everybody is, you know, if you had to get on stage and you had to introduce yourself to a bunch of people, how would you self-describe?
A bunch of people. First off, I would say, I'm a cool girl dad. I have four girls, absolutely love them. And we're talking like ages from 6, 4, 2, and 0. So like 4 kids, 6 and under. Love of my life. Wonderful wife. We've been married for almost 9 years coming this next month. And I just love to serve and help people. That's why one of the main things I do is to help dyslexic adults in their professional careers as well as their lives. If they feel stuck, if they feel like they have so much on the to-do list but don't know how to do it, or the systems they use and the habits they have just aren't right for the goals that they're working for, I help them out. Because I wish I had myself growing up. So now that I'm able to be a resource for adults, then now I can be that for them. And I just love helping people. And of course, I help the kids. Of course, I help the teenagers too. I volunteer at a camp every single year for type 1 diabetics. My wife's type 1 diabetic, and she went to the summer camp. So I'm a camp counselor there, as well as like I speak at elementary schools, to classrooms, and teach kids. So, you know, all around, I just like down heart, love to help people, and especially dyslexics, because I'm dyslexic. And yeah, that's how I describe myself.
I love that, girl dad. And you have four. You are a Superman, I just have to say, because I can't even imagine, you know, I hear so many people say, oh my gosh, terrible twos. And then they get into the threes and they're like, I don't even know how I could have two of these little rapscallions running around. And you have four under six. Yes, you and your wife must be just phenomenal.
appreciate that.
Yeah. Can I ask? Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, for anyone who has a lot of kids, you will get this. But three was like where it was like the max of input and output, because that's the point to where kids outmatch the parents. There's three kids and two parents. But then once you get the fourth, there wasn't more effort because our 6-year-old was helping out and she knows how to do laundry and take that out and do some dishes. And my 4-year-old also knows how to do that. So now that they're up and growing, they also help with the baby and changing diapers and such. So now it's just like we can let them play and hang out while we quickly do something like the dishes or laundry or a task or stuff. And everything's fine. And we don't have to be like constant attention. This baby needs to be in our vision or else it's going to scream and cry. Right. Type
thing. I think that's amazing. I mean, it really engenders a sense of family, having everyone participate. That's really beautiful. Let me ask you, when did you, or I don't know if it was you, but when you were a kid, when was it brought to your attention that possibly your brain worked differently than other people?
It was about the first grade, first or second grade, about 6 or 7 years old. I remember it vividly. We're sitting in the classroom of first graders. Teacher stood up and said, "Okay, we're going to go on an adventure." So we all stood up, got in that line, couple kids fighting for the front row. Eventually, when we got it, we'd walk down the hallway. And as we walked down and got to this other classroom door, teacher had to stand up against the wall. And as we stood there, teacher went in and told us to wait, and she went in. And of course, us curious ones went over and like peeked around the door. And inside, we saw several tables sitting there. Like tables can sit. Several tables there. Then one by one, they filtered us into the room. When it was my turn, I walked in, got up to the table, and there was this wonderful lady behind the table and says, "Hey, how are you doing?" You know, shy first grader. "Yeah, doing good." Like, "Cool. Can you read this for me?" And it was a paper that had some stories. I think I remember it being about like zebras or something. But it took me forever to read through it. So many big words. I mess up in places. And finally, like other of my friends were walking out of the classroom and more came in while I was still trying to read. Finally, at the end, got done with it and heard a nice little smile. She's like, "Thank you so much. You can go back to your classroom." Little did I know, I don't know what they were doing. But from that, that's when the school talked to my parents and said, "Hey, you might want to check if Willie has a learning disability or something that has to do with difficulty with reading." They didn't diagnose me. They just hinted at my parents to go to a third party and do it. So they did whatever test they did it. And lo and behold, I have this thing called dyslexia, which for me specifically affected my reading, my writing, and my speaking. And so that was kind of like the beginning of it all.
Was it a relief for you to get a diagnosis, or was it, I would imagine that it was also a little overwhelming.
I didn't care. I'm a first grader. I didn't really care about it. I'm like, cool. I don't know what this dyslexia thing is. I'm sure like it definitely impacted my parents more than me, right? But as a kid, I'm like, okay, only thing really different was in the background, we set up the 504 plan to help me with extra time on tests, getting notes and things like that. But really the only difference was every Friday for the last hour, I would go to a separate classroom with other kids who struggled with writing and reading. And we'd play games. We do flashcards. We learn how to read faster. And that was just fun. It was cool because I got extra toys and snacks that the other kids in my classroom didn't get.
Wow. You know, I've talked about this before on the podcast, but what I really am impressed with around your story is that someone noticed, and then they took positive action to help you out, or maybe, you know, maybe just put it out there so that people could figure out how to help you or assist you in becoming a better reader or a writer or what have you. But one of my ex-partners, he never got diagnosed, and they just kept passing him, even though his grades, nobody stopped back and said, I wonder why he's flipping letters, or I wonder why he's, you know, nobody paid attention. So what I really appreciate about your story is that someone noticed and they took the action that was needed, which makes my heart so happy. You know, because yes, we get by in this world, you need to learn how to read. You need to learn how to write. Yeah. I mean, at the very least, how to spell and do it correctly, so that you can navigate this world successfully. And so I'm so glad that, you got that attention that you needed. I want to go back to your camp counselor piece. I am intrigued by this. Okay. Because I went to Girl Scout camp when I was a wee one, shall we say. And then I just the other night, I don't know how old you are, but I watched Meatballs. Have you seen that movie? It's old Bill Murray, and it's about basically made in the early 80s. Camp counselor, like being camp counselors at this camp. And, you know, it's of course a ragtag group of, you know, these kids, and they're in charge of all these kids. And I just kept watching it because, you know, it's somewhat dated now. And I just thought, my God, there are so many places where there's just liability. You know, nobody's watching the kids. The kids are doing all these things. And I'm like, this is so dangerous. But back then it was totally normal. So I wanted to ask you, what's it like to be a camp counselor? I'm just so intrigued by this. Is it fun? Is it stressful? Is it out in the middle of nowhere and you camp?
Yeah, I enjoy it. I think it's pretty fun. So it's up in Stanley, Idaho. A lot of mountains around, a lot of wilderness around. It's at a Bible camp, a Luther Bible camp called Luther Heights. And yeah, every year we go up there and it's just really fun. All the teenagers that are there. So it's high school age. So we're talking 9th grade to 12th grade. And it's just a blast to be up there. And whenever I tell people about this, the first thing that comes to their mind is, well, it must be hard because they're type 1 diabetics and they got to test their blood sugars. And if their blood sugar goes too low, like how do you deal with that? But really it's not too different from like other summer camps. Cause we do whitewater rafting. We do rappelling off of like 120-foot rock. We go to the lake and there's like beach stuff and there's a boat and there's a waterfall that we jump into at a lake called Redfish. And we do plenty of hikes and we do activities and games during the nighttime when everyone gets together. And it's just a real blast. And I love for like the counselor side. It's like if anyone's been a camp counselor who's listening, it's just feels like normal. You got the person who's the head of the director, and then everyone, there's like a cabin leader and then the cabin counselors that help out. And there's like a little bit of meetings after dinner, but other than that, it's just have fun with the kids, have a schedule going, make sure things go in order and not too much stress. Of course, it's teenagers and you get like the little things here and there you got to deal with, right? But other than that, it's so much fun.
That is so cool. And I presume it's in the summer. Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah. Literally, it was like last week or 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Where the teen camp was. I wasn't able to go because of my kids had surgeries, very minor surgeries. They're all doing well. But I wasn't able to go. But yeah, like 2 weeks ago, summertime, it's a blast.
I bet. Oh my gosh. You know, everything except being at 120-foot rappelling thing, whatever that was, that everything was amazing until that. So,
well, the good thing is like there's a little, we call it Little Rock and Big Rock. The Little Rock you get, it's right next to the camp that you can literally walk to. And that's about 30 feet. So not too bad. Then there's Big Rock and that's like a hike that you do. We do it every Thursday and it takes like all day. Do the hike, take up the ropes and everything, hook it up. And there's a 90-foot and then there's the go up higher. And actually I misspoke. I think it's 180 feet for like going for most people do the 90-foot, but then there are a lot of people who go up and do the 180 feet. Yeah.
No. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You made it worse. How did you make that worse? So
all I did was change a number. How did I make it worse?
I don't know. It's weird, right? You know, when you were a kid, what did you dream about becoming?
I wanted to be a vet. I want to take care of animals.
I love that. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Loved animals.
Yeah. Like, did you grow up on a farm or was it you had pets and you kind of were like, oh, I love them so much. I'm going to take care of them.
Neither, actually. Yeah. So Utah is where I spent most of my years growing up, Salt Lake City area. So back then it was a little bit of more country than it is right now, but still pretty much city type. But I just loved animals and animals got along with me. love dogs and cats. And I had my first pet was a gecko, a little leopard gecko called Spike. And it was just the coolest thing to have a gecko. And then my siblings had fishes and hamsters and, you know, the normal pets. But I had a gecko to start out with. And I just love animals. And I just really enjoyed it. And I wanted to be a vet until junior year. And there's a short story with that, because junior year, you're able to then look at like colleges and figure out where you want to go. And there's like class credits. And there's this little, there's like an adjacent art of the high school, or like its own little part of like a community college that was nearby, where high schoolers can go for experience. And one of the programs they had was for veterinary. So I went to look at the program. And as they were showing me and we're walking in, there's a big group of us who are going in. There's this one small room, and we walked in there, and there was a bunch of snakes and rats. And that was the moment in which I had lost the desire to become a vet. And I hear it on my ears. They're like, oh, but you can go to like SeaWorld and work with aquatic animals, which was part of the dream that I wanted. But just that snakes and rats, I'm like, I'm good. I'll stick with the pets I have at home and the animals that I meet on the street. But other than that, we'll take a different career.
Yeah, if I walked, I mean, I have no problem with snakes and rats as long as they're over there and they're not approaching me. But you and I also talked about earlier, behind you is this really fabulous image of two dolphins. And I commented on it and you said, oh my gosh, I just, you know, you have an affinity or a love, or you like cetaceans and dolphins and what have you. And so that totally makes sense, going to SeaWorld, you know, and doing that. That makes so much sense in taking care of. I personally think dolphins are probably smarter than us in general.
Especially these days.
Yes, especially these days. That's right. That's right. Oh my God. The bar has like gone down a little
bit. And the attention span has also gone down.
I know. Oh, dear. Well, let me ask you, how did you end up doing the work that you're doing now? What was that journey like? How did you get here?
Yeah, there were, with the vet, there were two things I wanted growing up too. First one was to be an author. I loved reading, or at least looking at the pictures of kids' books, right? Loved reading and loved looking at the pictures, and I always wanted to be an author. Second thing was to be a teacher. But in the back of my head, I knew I didn't want to do the traditional teaching route because of there's so many regulations and so many rules, and you can't talk with the kids and help them out as much with those that are in place. They're in place for a reason, and I get it. And I love teachers who are out there crushing it and helping out the kids. And there's also some things that need to be said to a kid that can't say as a teacher. So I'm like, I want to do teaching, but I don't want to do the teaching route. So those are always in the back of my mind. And after I graduated college with a business management degree, and then right after that, I moved up to Idaho to be closer with my wife's family. And while I was up here, I started to read personal development books. And I started to learn about what this thing called business was, what this thing of entrepreneurship and finance, and this word of coaching. What is this coaching? And that started to like plant the seed of seeing this whole world that we live in, not as the chaotic, tumultuous world, but as something that's beautiful. But it just comes to how we see it. So I started working on myself. And as I worked on myself, I realized that I wish I had this when I was younger. I wish more kids and teenagers got to hear this. And so I started to offer advice and words. And that's one of the great skills that I have, or at least that people have told me, was I'm great at giving third party advice, that my emotions aren't attached to it, that it's really just them of what they're doing. So I started getting to this whole coaching thing as I was throwing produce at Walmart. Started a little side coaching business. First year, I had zero clients. But I did start a mastermind group. And the first time that I did, there were zero people that showed up. But I still got my phone and hit record and taught my lesson. Next time, still zero people, but I still hit record and taught the lesson. Next time after that, one person showed up and it was one of my friends. And I'm like, heck yes. So we were able to have a deep dive conversation and I shared what I wanted to and still recorded it. And little by little started to do that. The next year I got one client and it was my cousin. Cousin out of everything. But that it just started to build from there. And at the beginning, I was the success coach. If you want to be successful, then come work with me. Every business knows if you talk to everybody, nobody's going to listen because you can't talk to their pain points. You can't talk to the individual. You're just casting a wide net. So then I was at a networking event. Fast forward a couple of years later from that, I was at a networking event and I was talking with one of my friends. And it's raining outside. And I'm like, Ian, I want this to work. I don't want to be throwing produce at Walmart and stacking the meat. I just don't. I want to be coaching. I want to teach. I want to speak. I just want to do what I love. And he's very honest and said, well, Willie, you're talking to everybody. And your messages are like the general advice that you'd get from any book and any short video that you'd see. But you're dyslexic, right? I said, yeah. And he said, well, you have almost 30 years of experience with that. Why don't you teach dyslexics and teach dyslexic adults? And I said, well, if I do that, then I'm becoming too niche and yada, 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 yada. After that, on the drive home, it really started to sink in. And that's where this whole dyslexic coaching came in. And then I thought more about it. And I said, I don't want to just dyslexics in general. I don't want to teach because even though there are amazing psychological people out there and amazing industries and businesses who are helping kids and who are helping teenagers, once you hit this magical age of 18, it's like your resources are limited and it's done for you. And you have to live the rest of your life in trying to figure out how yourself works and you don't get the help that you want. So I said, no, I'm going to be a resource for adult dyslexics. And here's the thing. I say it's like kind of like the politically trying to be politically termed. It's like I say dyslexics. But here's the thing. Like you mentioned earlier, people don't know they're dyslexic. Literally in the U.S., we have 42 million people in the U.S. who have some form of dyslexia and only, 40 million. And of those 40 million, 2 million are diagnosed. So we have 38 million people, adults going around the U.S. trying to figure out how to work their jobs, how to be efficient, who try not to do twice the amount of work just to become average and be the yes person just so that they aren't hitting mistakes or failures and that inside they're not feeling that same trauma that they felt in elementary and middle school. So it's like, we got to have a voice for them. We got to bring us together. Because here's the thing too. We don't talk about dyslexia like we do about how the weather is or what Karen down the street was talking about the other day. No, it might be brought up in a conversation of just randomly. But other than that, I'd put it among the taboo topics of cancer and miscarriage. And I'm not depleting the importance of those. My wife has dealt with both of them. But that taboo-ness of it goes in there with it. So whenever people scroll through their social media and come across one of my videos, it's just like, you got dyslexia, embrace it. It's awesome. It's great. Here's some advantages for it. Creativity, perspective, problem solving, being able to empathetic. It's an instant connection. Yeah. And it just goes to show you that there are so many people out there that are, I don't like to use the word struggling, but it is a struggle, who are just feeling so challenged with not being burnt out, who are just trying to figure out how to work with all these systems that are built for neurotypical people and that don't work for them. Like just really just how to live. And I want to bring those people together. So all of that and all that all has configured into what I have today and what I'm doing.
Amazing. It kind of, I just really appreciate the fact that your friend stepped in. And, you know, I think sometimes people are hesitant to just be brutal with other people, you know, and just say, hey, look, yes. Like, you know, they don't want to hurt your feelings or they don't want to insult you or what have you, because they care about you. But your friend was brave and told you the truth. And it was, you know, you were kind of like, I don't know. Let me think about this. And then you kind of, it encouraged you to follow another path, which I think now here we are. Well, the other thing that is just also, I'm giving you three chairs is that you didn't give up. You said the first meeting, there were zero people. The second meeting, there were zero people. The third was one person. It was my friend.
Yes.
I mean, it's like you just kept going. So many people just give up. They stop. If they had two meetings where no one showed up, they would just quit. You know, they'd be like, this isn't working. I quit. I give up. But you were like, I've got a vision. I know what I want to do. Here it is. And I'm not going to let go. I'm going to do it. And you need to be commended for that, because a lot of people give up. So, yeah.
I appreciate that. And yeah, there are so many people who it's like that one more whack from the goal that's in front of them and just what they want. And to that, and to those listeners, keep going. Even if a lot of people I talk to, do deal with like, how do I get a promotion? How do I be able to start a business? Or how do I get bigger in my business? I talk to a lot of those people. And one of the questions that commonly comes up is, well, what if, like, do I quit my job and just go full force? And I'm like, no, putting a Band-Aid on a massive wound, it's still bleeding out. And now you're taking off the Band-Aid that's keeping it from getting infected. And now you're just going out into the world being like, I'm going to hope that everything's going to work out. Like, no, your job is your financial security. And then on the side, do something each day to be able to get it. And find people to work with. I know that's a common thing that seems to be brought up. There's a reason why there's not one person on this planet. There are over 8 billion people. And that's because we're supposed to work together. We're supposed to help each other out. Not just be nice, but be kind. Be willing to be honest, but do it with love.
Thank you. Yes, 2 thumbs up for everything you just said. I appreciate it. Thank you. I mean, I think we should be saying this and shouting this from the rooftops every day. Let us pivot a little bit. I'd love to ask you the second question, which is, did you grow up in a religious household? What did that look like? And then, you know, for you, has that connection to source, God, goddess, whatever you believe, has that evolved over time? And if so, how?
Yeah. Yes. So I did grow up in a religious household, grew up in LDS, or the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, grew up in a household like that. And it was great. Family, we all went to church every single Sunday. It actually connected me and my sister. So I have 4 siblings. It's my older brother, me, sister, and then 2 younger brothers. I know. Princess. My sister is glad that us brothers married, so she has another sister. But it helped us to connect, because all of us like drawing. And so in church, while the speakers were speaking about whatever they're talking about, and as a teenager, we're like, we just want to get through church so we can go back home and eat some food. We'd bring notepads, and while we were not listening, right, to the speaker, we would be drawing animals. And so literally, I love this memory of me and my sister. I would write down an animal's name, hand the notebook to her. She would then draw the animal and then write the next animal's name, hand it back to me, and then I would draw the animal. And I love that because it kept my mind engaged while people were talking about Jesus Christ. And it was great. So growing up with it was great. Teenage years. Also, I wasn't a big fan of like always going to church on Sundays. I admit now, didn't before, I admit now that there were several Sundays in which I faked sick just so I can stay home. I didn't have to go. I will admit that. But I'm glad that I was growing up in a religious home, because then I served a 2-year mission when I turned 18 and actually came up to Idaho, which is where I'm at. And I met my wife while I was up here. So like it was just us two missionaries went to their house for dinner. And she was just one of the daughters in the house. And after I got back from my mission, I was sending out like a blast of Facebook request messages to everybody. Cause like you meet so many cool people over 2-year span. So it's just like, I'm sending 300 friend requests to everybody, her being one of them. And about a month and a half after that, she poked me on Facebook. And literally my first thought was, Facebook still does pokes. So I poked her back. And I wish it was sooner and I wasn't as cowardice as I was, but literally we poked each other back and forth for like 2.5 months. Then finally I got the courage to message her and say, hey, how are you and your family doing? And it went from there. So like grateful for my mission as well. And how that evolved to where I'm at today. I love my relationship with God. And I don't, it used to be the, make sure the, it was always, it felt like it was so structured growing up. And I don't know if that was just kind of like in the Utah sense, that's how people did it or whatnot. But now it was the, say, address Heavenly Father, be grateful, be thankful, ask Him for what you need, things that are going on, and then close in the name of Jesus Christ. Like, cool. But nowadays it's like, no, I'm talking to my dad. I'm talking to a father that's in heaven, and I tell him things are going on. I know later today I'll talk about how awesome this podcast was and how we're able to talk about so many great things. I'll talk about the wonderful things that my kids did this morning. And there are times where I'm just angry, like really sad or really angry. It's like, God, I hate what's going on. I hate that my wife and I get in a fight about finances. I hate how my kids yell at me whenever I take the tablet away and tell them to go outside or read a book. I hate how, or like, I'm really sad about just what I hear about on the news about people being so just angry with each other and being keyboard warriors and commenting negative comments. We just have a peaceful world. God, can't we just have a peaceful world? And it really helps me out because it's grown my relationship from thee and thou, which I'm still very respectful, my God, very respectful. And I talk to him like I would talk to my dad.
Yes. That's so great. Amazing. And yes, I also wonder why we just can't be nice to each other or kind, or, you know, use our words with compassion. And
it's the hurt, right? There's people are hurt. And in a world that we live in today, you know, we use the words personal growth and self-development, but like emotional intelligence, it's not talked about. Yep. The news isn't like, let's improve ourselves. It's, we need to make sure that our news station is the first one to get this story out before the other news stations or Facebook or Instagram, because we want people to come here first and hear it from us. So it's like this weird urgency of, I don't need the facts. I'm just going to put it out. And it's like, we all just slow down a little bit, be a little bit more kind and actually talk to the person. Because I think if we just do that for an extra 5 seconds a day, we live in a pretty good world.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like the facts and I like them to be factual. And yes. Real. That would be amazing. for that. What a lovely history of kind of your, I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of captivated by the fact that, you know, because I have been in the situations as a kid where you go to church and you're like too old to get sent off with the little kids to the kids' Sunday school. And, you know, once you graduate out of being able to go and play and, you know, you kind of, you're 10 and you're just like, I don't understand this 20 minute. And I didn't even think about bringing something to draw on. That would have just been brilliant. But that story is really powerful. So thank you for sharing that. And also very sweet. And what a fun game. I mean, I am a terrible artist, so I would have not been able to contribute in any way, shape, or form to any sort of escapade like that. But yeah,
I think it would have been fun to see your like stick figures and drawings. I think that would be pretty cool.
Thank you. For you. For me, I would have been like, ooh. Let me ask you the main question of the podcast. I would so appreciate if you would share one or two stories or three. I mean, whatever you feel called to of something in your life that you either witnessed or experienced that you thought was magical, miraculous, or mysterious.
There are so many good ones that we can go into. The first one was at a Chick-fil-A. Lo and behold, at a Chick-fil-A. So we're now living in Idaho. We've been here for about a year. Before we moved up here, we were in Utah County, Utah. And we were there for 3 years. So it's right before summer hit was when we were moving up here to Idaho. And my wife and a few of our kids went up with her to be at the house and that. But me and my oldest had to stay down because she was still in preschool and finishing that off. So me and my oldest drove to Chick-fil-A. And I was talking to a potential client who I was working with. And I was excited for her to jump on board. She was excited to do the coaching and to become part of the community and everything. And we went to Chick-fil-A. We didn't go through the drive-thru because it was lunchtime. Drive-thru was so long at lunchtime. So we parked, went into the building, got our order. They're like, what name can we put on the order? I said, Blake. And I always say Blake because for some reason, whenever I say Willie, so many different names pop up on the order list. Or they're like, can you say that one more time? I was like, Blake. Usually they get that on the first go. We take a step back, stand there, we're waiting. Few minutes goes by. We're like, okay, that's fine. And then they call out an order. And they're just like, Malik? Malik? I'm like, you Malik? I'm like, no, I'm not Malik. I'm like, okay. And they put it on the pickup delivery little stool. Another 5 minutes goes by, which is unheard of for Chick-fil-A. They are so quick getting their food out. So finally, after like 10 minutes of standing there, I walk over and said, hey, is our food ready? She looks it up and looks at the screen. She says, well, your order's already gone out. Like, what was in your order? I gave her the order. She says, okay. And that bag was still sitting there. So walked over the bag and opened the bag and looked around, and that was our order. Malik, lo and behold, was the last name of the client that I was about to onboard. So I got to the car, got my girl her chicken nuggets and fries, opened my phone and sent a voice message telling her this is like this exact story. And she's like, this is a miracle. Like this was the sign of assurance that I was looking for. And I'm like, cool, good for you. This is an awesome coincidence for me of everything going on. And maybe it was divine and miracle, but I was like, this is so cool. Like, it's so cool that Blake and Malik do not sound alike. I think they both have an L and an E in it. Besides that, that's about it. But it was just really cool of literally, we made that decision the day of. I went out for lunch and that happened. And I sent a message and they're like, this is happening. We're going. And she's been one of my favorite clients ever since. I don't pick favorites. For those who are listening, I don't pick favorites, but I absolutely love it.
That is wild.
Yeah.
That is wild. Yeah, Blake and Malik do not sound anything alike. Like, at all. At all. That is really, well, I mean, totally massive affirmation that you two were supposed to be working together. I mean, that is just, that's completely wild. Wow. It's those kind of events that, I don't know. Those are the kind of events that make me happy to wake up every day and go out my front door. Because you never know when something that kind of fun or outrageous or synchronistic is going to happen. And it's kind of enchanting. I don't know if you feel the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel that God gives us seeds of, like, in the Bible, he uses the term fruits of our labor. It's like he gives us examples and results and just like little droplings that we are on the right path of where we're going. And so, yeah, it was absolutely one of those moments of, this is good. I'm going on the right path. And I, if I'm remembering right, I think I also had like a doubting session that day too, of like, is this coaching really what I'm supposed to be doing? So that adds another flavor to it.
Oh yeah. You got the sign.
God's like, yes, your Chick-fil-A order is the sign from God. I do have a second story.
Yes, let's hear it. Let's jump into it. Yes.
Okay. So, yeah, second story. So I already talked part of it, but it was, goodness gracious, it was my wife on the, so met my wife on the mission, came back, friended her. That winter time, me and one of my other friends who also served the mission up there, we were going up to go visit a bunch of families who are up there that we were able to meet and that wanted to go see. So we took a trip up there for a week, got up there, and I was talking with my wife over Messenger. And she says, hey, would love to go on a date with you while you're up here. I'm like, heck yes, let's go on a date while we're up here. Lo and behold, literally the first day that we were there, the house that we were going to stay at flooded. Like the basement where they had like the guest room and stuff, a piped burst, it flooded down and it flooded their basement. And they're like, hey, we can't have you in. Like, we can't have you here. We can't guest you. Like, oh, literally, I was with my future wife. I was sitting there talking to her. She called up her dad and said, hey, this home, they just flooded. They were having, and they knew who they were. Like, these people that like they're flooded, they can't have these two here. Can they stay at our house? And he's like, yeah, that'd be fine. They can stay in the other room. So literally, I was able to be at the house and we still have a picture of like me and my friend in bunk beds for like as adults, us two in bunk beds as we were staying at my wife's parents' house. And I was able to get to know my future father-in-law, mother-in-law, and siblings way before even we were thinking about like dates and stuff and engagement and being married. So it's like, yeah, that was pretty cool.
I mean, meeting the family can be one of the most stressful and anxiety inducing parts of any relationship. Meeting the family of the one that you are dating. So you kind of got, you know, this really incredible exposure to them. They were exposed to you, and it was in this really convivial atmosphere where there was no judgment or expectation. And you guys actually got to know each other. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't like me holding my fist together metaphorically, just being like, so how's the weather today and just like those awkward icebreaker conversations. No, because they knew me from when I was out on my mission as a missionary, and they knew I was had great characteristics and loved me then. Then I got to spend a week with them. And so they got to, we got to play card games. Like we got to have, we just got to enjoy. And so literally it was being able to meet and talk with them without anyone thinking that this was going to be a whole marriage. So we got to know each other. And after, and when we started dating, it was a lot easier than what I hear from other people when it comes to meeting the family.
I bet. I mean, I will talk about the weather to anyone because I love the weather. So, if, you know, for example, if you were to come to my family and say, so how's the weather? I'd be like, let's talk about the weather. Okay. We're going to talk about the weather. And did you see those cumulus clouds yesterday? They were magnificent. I'm like a weather nerd. So yeah, that would have made me very happy. If you brought that up. But I love that you go right to that weather thing. So I'm not a fan of small talk. You have to know that. It's very painful for me because I understand that it's a societal convention and it's like this weird icebreaker thing, but I also find it to be really tedious and exhausting. It's really challenging for me to engage in small talk. So oftentimes I like to be a fly on a wall at parties or other events and just witness other people try to engage in small talk, because it is incredible to watch other people try to find something to say to other people. This makes me sound like such a monster, but it is the lengths that people will go to try to make friends or make something interesting is astounding to me. And so, you know, but for me, talking about the weather would not be small talk because I'm a science nerd. So I'd be like, oh, yes. Did you see those incredible, the capture? Do you know what red sprites are? They
I've heard the term.
Yes. It's an upper atmospheric phenomenon that was beautifully captured last month or the month before by a photographer in Tibet, I believe. And it was accidental. He didn't even mean it. Just was like, you know, and they think it's the earth calibrating itself just with lightning that it then like discharges off into space, which I find fascinating, but they're incredibly beautiful. So you would actually be in trouble if you asked me how the weather, you know, what do you want to talk about the weather? Cause I'd be like, yes, let's talk about the weather.
Let's do it. See, that's great. Cause I'm with you. I don't like small talk. I like deep conversations. I like we're jumping right to the soul. I love that. But if you're going out and meeting someone, a stranger or an acquaintance that you like know from somewhere, who is going to be vulnerable and trusting enough to be like sharing the skeletons in their closet and sharing things that are going on? They're not. So I've started to learn how to use small talk as a tool to help others be comfortable enough so we can have the deep talk. And there's so many great ways to do that. Questions is a great one. So instead of asking like, hey, how are you doing? Or how's the weather doing? For you, great question. In depth, you'll just jump right into it. For most other people, it's like, yeah, it's sunny outside. It's great. Instead of those questions, I ask questions like, what are you passionate about? Or what's your story? And I use a variation depending on the person, but it's more of like, you seem like an awesome individual. What did you have to go through in order to like create this awesome you who you are today? That's like the extended version of what's your story. Then there's my favorite golden question, which is if you didn't have limits on time, resources, connections, or money, and didn't care about what anyone thought of you, what would you want to do? Talks to the soul.
My answer would be, don't you think that we could teach dolphins, like not sign language, but potentially sign language? You know how they've taught the great apes sign language so that they could communicate? I feel like dolphins are smart, really smart. And so teaching them how to communicate, and then we could figure out what's going on in their minds. That would make me happy. I would like to do that.
I think that'd be cool. And since you mentioned dolphins, like, I think that'd be really cool.
Says the dolphins right behind you. I love it. I mean, I just kind of want to know what they think about everything that's going on. Have you read Douglas Adams, you know, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and the famous question, which is what is the answer to the universe or something? And it's, they're interviewing dolphins because all the dolphins have decided to leave Earth because they know that things are going downhill. So the dolphins are just vacating the planet. And they're like, well, what's the answer to the universe? And the dolphins, if I'm remembering this correctly, says, I forget the number. It's like, well, the answer is 39, and then never explains anything. And they all just leave. And so everybody who's left behind is like, what does that mean? And I think it's just, you know, it's the dolphins being smart, probably way smarter than we are. And it's up to us to come up with the answer.
They're given like a brain exercise. They're like, these humans aren't going to get it for like decades. So we'll just say a random number and they'll think that they're trying to solve it. And maybe that'll get them smarter. But peace out, humans. We're out.
Just a little reminder that there's a little bit of an Easter egg at the end of these credits. Coach Willie and I talk a little bit about dolphins, and we laugh and just have a little bit more fun. I need to thank Coach Willie for being on the show and being such a great guest. He really was open to sharing some things that were incredibly painful, but also incredibly meaningful. If you want to learn a little bit more about this dynamic human being, please check out all of the links in the episode show notes. They're there for your enjoyment and learning. Another impeccable human being on the show, and yeah, another person reminding us that mystery and magic abounds. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Coach Willie. Keep your eyes open. You know, even if something negative happens, like when the house flooded and suddenly they had nowhere to stay, remind yourself that maybe that incident, maybe that happening is leading you to somewhere better and brighter. See you next week for the very next episode. And until then, I hope life is filled with summer days that are gorgeous and not too hot. Lots of delicious summer foods and laughter. Laughter with everyone you love.
Other, I don't know if you like reading about dolphins, but one of the books that I loved as a kid was, oh my gosh, what was it called? It's written by Madeline L'Engle, and it's about a young girl in this, not young, but like 15 in the summer. And she goes to Martha's Vineyard and they have a dolphin training program there where they're teaching the dolphins how to do things. So she works with dolphins the whole summer. And a Ring of Endless Light. Have you read that? It's really beautiful. Oh, it's so great. I read it as a kid and I was like, okay, I got to talk with some dolphins like yesterday. Okay. Get out of my way, everybody. I'm going to mind meld.
Here we go.
Yes, here we go. Here we go. So it's probably, you know, too young for you now, but, as a kid, I was like, oh, dolphins. So I get the dolphin thing. I'm telling you, they are just magnificent creatures. And the fact that you esteem them so much tells me about how amazing you are, frankly.
Like, oh, I appreciate that. You know, I just love dolphins. And I'm trying to, this could go off on a whole nother tangent, but I won't let it. I'll just say my short piece with it. This last week, I've been trying to learn just how to like what I love doing. Because it feels like I get so caught up in busy and achieving and getting results and outcome that I have lost the taste of just liking what I love. And so I am right now embracing that I love dolphins. They're really cool. Just the other day, I was embracing that I love I loved Pokemon as a kid. And I loved the little like miniature ball, like just chuck a ball at them and catch them. There's like different colors that they can be and such. So I'm just learning what I like to love again. So I appreciate that, because dolphins, they're great.
I love that. That should be the tagline for the Dolphin Society. Dolphins, they're great.
Yeah.